Is it time for a mind shift? If you don't know what that means, then join your host, Dr. Clint Haycock, a former evangelical Christian pastor and Bible college teacher of over 20 years, along the journey of deconstruction and reconstruction of faith, life, religion, and spirituality.
I'm so happy to welcome back the Naked Pastor. Thank you, David Hayward, for dropping in once again.
Yeah, glad to be here. Yeah.
So you have a brand new book coming out, which is what we're going to be talking about, I think, in this episode. I'm sure we'll get into some other stuff, but What is the title of your new book and what is it all about?
First of all, thanks for having me on your show again,
Clint. Yeah, it's been great.
Hi, everybody out there. Yeah, actually, the book's already out. It's already for sale. It's on Amazon, on Kindle as well. It's called Till Doubt Do Us Part, When Changing Beliefs Change Your Marriage. You know, it's pretty obvious what it's about. It's about when marriages, although, you know, it can be applied to any relationship, really. But I'm focusing kind of on marriages in the book. But yeah, it's about when couples go through deconstruction, maybe one partner or the other partner or both at the same time. And, you know, you probably know what it's like. I definitely know what it's like. I know a lot of people out there know what it's like, that it's a real challenge. So I've been writing about it now for a couple of years, and what I've done is just compile all these posts together and made chapters and added cartoons that are, you know, a mixture of funny, poignant, sad, offensive.
Yeah, gotta have some offensive ones in there.
Yeah.
I don't know what your story is like, but in my case, we were fortunate in that we were, both my wife and I, we were kind of deconstructing at the same time. We were on slightly different paths, but
right.
One good piece about that is, yeah, we ended up in the same place in the end. But I've heard stories, yeah, horror stories, bad, sad stories, really, about partners who, yeah, like you say, one's deconstructing, the other kind of doubles down and goes even further down the sort of fundamentalist evangelical route. Is that what you've found in talking to people who've had those experiences?
Well, you know, it's really interesting. Yeah, absolutely. There's a lot of sad stories out there. And I have a lot of friends who their marriages didn't survive because of, you know, deconstruction. And like I've said before, I think I mentioned this on your show last time, there's two kinds of deconstruction. There's one from the church and one theological, spiritual. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I've seen couples where they might deconstruct from the church and it causes an uproar in their marriage, or they deconstruct theologically and it causes tension in the marriage, or both, definitely tension. I've seen a lot of my friends' marriages not survive. So it's really sad for me. And now, you know, I always say, you know, there's some marriages that aren't meant to continue.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe they weren't meant to be together in the first place. I know a lot of couples who've gotten married in conservative Christian circles because that was the only way they could legally have sex, or it was prophesied that they should be together, or the pastor told them that they should marry, or the families, you know, all kinds of reasons. And when they deconstruct, they realize, I'm not going to take this bullshit. I'm going to, you know,
get my own life.
And they file for a divorce. You know, that happens.
Mm.
But this is mostly the book is, I said changing beliefs because I know couples who are deconstructing both ways. Mm. Like I know some couples who were atheists and are becoming spiritual.
Ah, right.
Or one of the partners is becoming spiritual. So I'm just as interested in helping those people who are moving, you know, on the other in the other direction on the slide,
mm-hmm.
on the spectrum. So,
right.
So that's why it's about changing beliefs.
Right.
It's basically about, I want to provide some resources and some help for couples who realize they're not on the same page spiritually. And what are they going to do about it?
Mm-hmm. So how do they work through it? Is it possible? Do you have stories in your book where couples were able to work out those differences? Because the other partner may not agree with the other person's point of view. If, the, as you say, they've changed their beliefs, what happens when they can't seem to come to the same conclusions? Is it possible to work it out?
Well, Lisa and I did. Lisa and I worked it out. You guys did. I know other couples who've worked it out. I know other couples who are vastly different from each other. You know, the partners in the relationship, vastly different, and they have a thriving relationship. Like I do agree that one of the positive energies in a relationship that makes it exciting is the polarity. I mean, if you and your partner are exactly identical in each and every way, it doesn't make for a very exciting relationship. So when you have that polarity, like a battery, there's a positive and a negative pole. That's what creates the energy. And in a relationship, Lisa and I are very, very different. Very different.
Mm-hmm.
We're very different on the Enneagram. We're very different on the Myers-Briggs personality type. We're very different spiritually, you know, in many ways. And yet, I think it's that polarity that creates a lot of dynamism and energy in our relationship that makes it kind of exciting. Mm-hmm. So, and like I've always said, it's not compatibility of beliefs that makes a relationship work. It's the love and mutual respect that makes it work.
Ideally, you want to complement each other, as you say. The nice thing about being so different, if you can work it out, just in terms of just the relationship, isn't it? You're not going to be the same, but that's what, like you're saying, that's what attracted me to my wife initially, is that she was kind of the opposite of the things I was. She's way more extrovert than me. I'm more of an introvert. And I thought, okay, this is someone who likes to be around people, who likes to have a good time in a crowd. I'm not that way, you know? So we've been able, but there's strengths and weaknesses, isn't it? So trying to work, it's been 25, 26 years of trying to figure this whole thing out, you know, then you add the deconstruction piece in there. You've got a whole nother can of worms to deal with.
Yeah. So, and I think it's important too, that we remember that deconstruction isn't like an accident, or that it isn't like a cancer or something, that it's personal growth. This is growth that's happening. So if we can't, you know, if we see deconstruction as a bad thing, a negative thing, and we're like, why did you have to, you know, get it? You know, why did you have to get deconstruction? Now we're, you know, it's ruined everything. It's personal growth. And if we can keep that in perspective, then we can see that the person's trying to grow, trying to develop, and we should respect and give space for that.
That's such a difficult thing, isn't it? Something that I've been learning too over the last probably year, that this deconstruction process, it's not like a one and done sort of thing, is it? Yeah. It is a lifetime of effort and work. And in the case of both me and my wife, she always said, well, I didn't go through the same stuff you did. You know, she wasn't a pastor. She didn't go through all the schooling and deal with all the stuff. But even going back to when she was in high school, the stuff that she went through, it affected her in a big time way in terms of religious trauma. And that's only come out in the last few months. So that's another aspect of her deconstruction that we've been able to work through as a couple. Which, again, it's fortunate in our respect that we were able to do it together. But, yeah, I can't imagine. I've heard stories of couples who, like you say, were not able to work it out, and they've had to go their separate ways, unfortunately.
Don't you think, though, it's kind of like some people enter into a marriage like it's a – well, it is kind of a contract. But, I mean, they treat it like a contract. I didn't sign up for this. I married so-and-so and such, and you were like this, and I didn't sign up for you to be questioning and doubting your beliefs.
To be changing, I want that person to stay the same the minute we walk down the aisle. You can never change or grow, I guess.
Yeah. So there are people who, a lot of people, you know, and it's natural who, you know, they're married, they're happily married, and then one starts deconstructing and the other's like, nope. No, I didn't sign up for this. This isn't what I want. I want to, you know, I had a dream of being a nice Christian family, going to church every Sunday, raising our kids in youth group and all this kind of thing. And it won't happen if I stay together with this guy or woman. So, it happens for sure. What I see happen in a lot of relationships is some kind of trauma happens that sparks the deconstruction, like, maybe there's something happens at church, or there's a death or some huge loss or some kind of a crisis happens. And, you know, that starts the deconstruction happening where, whoa, I believe God was going to take care of me. Obviously not, or, you know, whatever. And so it's huge. It's not like, you know, I wonder if there's a hell or not, or if I wonder if Jonah was eaten by a whale or by a great fish. You know, it's not like that. It's like traumatic crisis time, And it's hard for any couple to go through and recover from trauma, right? It's devastating, and any kind of trauma can have an effect on a relationship. I read a study recently where most couples who experience the death of a child end up splitting up because the grief is too much, and it's just really difficult to stay together. And I've seen it happen, and you know, it's because trauma. So, you know, a lot of deconstruction is initiated by trauma in some people's lives. So it just gets really, really complicated because, you know, my wife and I have gone through trauma. We've experienced PTSD. Mm-hmm. You know, one of them was when I was hired by a big ministry to plant a church, and I planted the church, and I ended up getting fired, and her dad died in our home, and all this happened at the same time. And this sort of initiated a huge kind of a soul searching journey. Mm-hmm. And it was devastating. So you're not only dealing with questioning your beliefs, you're dealing with the trauma and the grief and trying to figure out how to stay together. You know, it's difficult.
I think that's a big one, isn't it? Because when you're an evangelical, when you're a Christian, God's always there for you. So you believe anyway, like right. You say. But when you take that religious piece out of the equation, we've been through a lot of deaths in our family in the last couple of years too. My wife's parents and my youngest daughter's fiance suddenly died, and you know, all these traumatic things. And yet I find myself going, normally I would be praying about this. I would be saying all the platitudes, and those aren't there, you know? Yeah. So what resources do you have to deal with trauma other than, I guess, getting therapy, counseling, talking it through without the God piece? That's a difficult thing, isn't it?
Yeah. Yeah. You know, that's what I keep encouraging people. Get help. Just, you know, get help. This is serious. Mm-hmm. If you love your spouse and you want to stay together, get help. I mean, you know, I'm not going to try and fix my vehicle. I'm not going to try and fix my laptop. You know,
You need a specialist.
I'm not going to try and do surgery on myself. I mean, I'm going to hire an expert. And there's experts out there on relationships and marriage that can help. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I think that's one of the reasons why Lisa and I are still together is we invest so much money in books and counselors and therapy and marriage retreats and couples retreats and conferences and workshops. Mm. And it's helped that all that's an investment that has helped us to survive.
Do you feel like being an ex-pastor that was obviously a big part of your whole adult life, being a pastor? That's your identity. You go to school, you go to seminary, you go to Bible college. I mean, I'm speaking from my own experiences. Our whole married life was basically about me going to college and seminary and being a pastor and a teacher. And now all that's gone away. So, you know, do you feel like that's a part of the whole deconstruction piece as well? Now that your career basically is something completely different than what it was as a pastor.
Yeah. Well, yeah, that's true. Like Lisa and I were kind of deconstructing, and that's what kind of led to me leaving the ministry. Mm-hmm. I left in 2010. So we're talking 10 years now. And when we left the ministry, we also left the church because it was just complicated. That's how it happened.
Yeah.
And all that was really, really traumatic and life-changing, as you know. I didn't know what I was going to do. I didn't know. We lost our friends. We had to file for bankruptcy. You know, our kids were gone, empty nest. We lost all our friends, like I said, our community. I lost my sense of meaning and purpose and destiny in life. And, you know, not just a paycheck and, you know, all this kind of thing. So it was just really traumatic. And the next 2 years, our married life was up and down. Like it was really, really scary. I wasn't sure we were going to make it a couple of times. Mm-hmm. And, but we did, you know, we hung in there and we did. Some don't, that's fine. I'm not judging one way or the other. It happens. But, you know, I look back and I think it's because we put investment in that we had some skills maybe going into it, like communication and patience and giving space and mutual respect, but mostly communication that helped us to get through that difficult time and to the other side. But yeah, leaving the ministry and the church and leaving behind an evangelical kind of a theology was huge. Kind of like those lab rats that are dropped into that oxygen-enriched gel. And at first they struggle because they feel like they're drowning, but then they start breathing and they're breathing in and out this liquid. And it felt like that, except for 2 years.
Right.
trying to adjust to a new way of living. Yeah, yeah, absolutely.
And you realize, okay, I'm going to survive this thing. It's a case of knowing how to navigate. What about if you have children? That's got to be a complicating factor for couples who are maybe on different pages, because that's another factor in there. What if the kids are a big part of their life is going to church? And yet, let's say mom or dad, one of them is maybe questioning a lot of things and not going to church anymore, but the other partner is. Now the kids are caught in the middle of all this. How do you navigate through that?
Yeah, well, that's a huge one, and I talk a lot about that. Our kids were young adults by the time this all happened to us, but you know, they saw us deconstructing, you know, before that. But we'd always empowered our kids to make their own choices when it came to their own spirituality and their own expression of what it meant to be a spiritual person or not.
Right.
When I use the word spiritual, I always want to explain. I don't mean anything supernatural by that. I'm not invoking any kind of a deity. I'm talking about the inner psychological life of a person. Mm. So when I say spiritual, I would speak of it in the same way a Buddhist philosopher would. Okay, so I'm not meaning anything divine or magical. So when we empowered our kids to determine how they wanted to be spiritual, so by the time we left the church and everything, it wasn't a shock or a surprise to them. It was a development. But, you know, I talk a lot about it. One of my chapters is how to change in front of your kids. It is difficult, especially if you want your kids to think that you're in control. You've got your life together and you're in charge and you're going to guide them. You know, if you have that kind of mystique about you in the family, then you're going to be in trouble. They can smell a rat a mile away.
They sure can.
And if they detect any chink in your armor, any loose screws or anything not quite right, they'll see it, they'll smell it, they'll find it. So it's best to be honest right up front, and just say, okay kids, this is what's happening, you have a choice. Just like we did,
talk through it with them.
Go to church, I don't, you have a choice. We'd love, you know,
we're gonna support,
wanna go, we're behind you.
Yeah,
wanna stay home, we're behind you. Why mom and dad, what's going on? Well, I'm just not sure anymore, you know, I'm questioning my beliefs. And that's okay to talk like that with your kids.
Yeah. You have to, really. I can remember my best friend in high school, I met in Seattle years and years ago. Now, I don't know what happened, but when his parents married, she was not a Christian and he was a very staunch evangelical. And he actually led her to the Lord. And so that's how they got together. She became a Christian because of his influence. They got married, had three kids. My friend was the oldest in the family. At some point, their marriage fell apart. I don't know what happened, but they got a divorce and he went just sideways. He walked away from the church. He walked away from everything. He started sleeping around. He had girlfriend. Everything he had been against, basically, as an elder in the church and everything. And that just about destroyed my friend because, like you said, it was the opposite of what you're promoting. They obviously didn't talk about it. It was super sudden. And here's this guy that was an elder in the church. He was a strong evangelical, and he turned his back on the whole thing, including his family. And my friend, at about 13 years old, he was just absolutely devastated. I don't know if he ever really recovered from that, even as an adult. You know, so the way we handle these things is hugely important. If the marriage does fall apart, I don't know what happened, but it just ended very suddenly.
I talk about that one chapter I call The Dangers in Deconstructing. And because I saw it in my own life. Maybe we talked about this before. It was one of the things that nearly destroyed our marriage was just me being an asshole.
We are just going to take a very short break here in my conversation with one of my favorite Canadians, David Hayward, the Naked Pastor, as we discuss his book, Till Doubt Do Us Part. You know, and I just realized we didn't really talk about that at all in this episode, but we start throwing around the term deconstruction a lot. What does that actually mean? For those of us that have deconstructed or are in the process of deconstructing, we might have a good handle on it. But I think for a lot of people who are believers and in this case, we're talking about evangelical Christianity, but you could be talking about someone who follows any religion or is part of a cult or any group with undue influence. Basically, I think one of the best ways I've heard to describe it is as follows. It's like in your mind, imagine you have a set of shelves, a mental set of bookshelves in your mind. And every time in your belief system or your religion, something happens that really you can't explain, you don't really get a sufficient answer for it, but that doesn't stop you from staying within that religion or belief system. You sort of put that item on your mental shelf, but eventually, perhaps over the years or decades, that happens over and over and over again until finally the mental shelves just can't handle the weight of all that cognitive dissonance, all that sort of stuff that's weighing you down mentally, and finally the shelves just collapse. And you say to yourself, you know what, I just cannot do this anymore. I can't believe this system. No longer can I be a part of this. And of course, as we're talking about in this episode with his book, what happens when you're in a marriage situation or in a relationship with another person who perhaps doesn't see it the same way, who maybe doubles down and stays within that particular religion that you're seeking to walk away from. And of course, that is the subject of David's book. So I think that's a helpful way to talk about deconstruction in a way that makes sense. Now, I just wanted to say, before we get back into the chat with David, let's talk about what's coming up in the next few episodes here. There's some absolutely great stuff headed your way. We've got an episode with Dr. Warren Throckmorton that is going to drop next as we discuss the controversial quote-unquote historian, the Christian nationalist David Barton. And if you've not heard of him, he runs an organization called Wall Builders out of Aledo, Texas. And Barton is one of the foremost promoters of this myth of America as being founded as a Christian nation. And that feeds into the Christian nationalism and the Christian rights search for dominion and what they're doing, especially in the Trump administration. So that's a really important episode. Then we've got Dr. Michael McVicker coming up after that, who wrote the book on R.J. Rush Dooney, Christian Reconstructionism and its impact on American conservatism and evangelicalism, the Christian right, homeschooling, and many more things. I'm also in chats with Sarah Posner now. I've finally been able to chase her up and get her to talk about her book, Unholy, which has just come out. So I'm really looking forward to chatting with Sarah Posner. So some really great content heading your way. We've also got some really good guests dropping in for our monthly Mindshift Zoom calls, which is one of the benefits that you get for supporting the show on Patreon. We have got Julianne Smith coming up in the month of August. She was just on the show not long ago talking about Christian dominion theology and how that relates to homeschooling and the Quiverful movement. So that's going to be really good. And then we've got as bonus guests, Conway and Siegelman dropping in at the end of August, and they are working on a research project. They want to talk to ex-evangelical people. So I'm really excited to have Conway and Siegelman back as well in August. So we've got two calls coming up in August. Then we've got Catherine Stewart, author of The Power Worshippers and The Good News Club. She is going to be dropping in September. So some absolutely fantastic content for the Mindshift Zoom calls, which, as I say, you get to be a part of that if you are a supporter of this show on Patreon. And in fact, speaking of Zoom calls, if you want to see one of our calls, I just posted up on my Mindshift Podcast Facebook page, which is the public page, our last month's call with Kristen Cobes-Dumais. So drop into the Mindshift Podcast Facebook page, like the page, and you can watch the video, the chat we had with Kristen Dumais as we talked about her book, Jesus and John Wayne. If you have any thoughts, questions, comments, of course, you can always follow David on Twitter at Naked Pastor. You can follow me at Mindshift 2018. Let us know what your thoughts are, comments. And now let's get back into the chat with David Hayward as we continue to talk about his book, Till Doubt Do Us Part. And if you recall where we left off, David had just mentioned that one of the big turning points in his marriage situation after walking away from the church and everything else was that he finally admitted to himself and to his wife that he was basically being an asshole. And so let's figure out how they were able to work through that and move forward in their marriage. Oh, right. There is that, of course.
There is that. And
at least you admit it.
Just me being unaware. The church doesn't prepare you to question your beliefs, right? Mm. And to experience deconstruction or to walk away. So when I walked away from the ministry and from the church, like I said, I lost my identity, my reputation, my accountability team, mm-hmm. my leadership team, my friends and community, my sense of meaning and purpose and destiny, all that I lost overnight.
Yeah, it's huge.
As a result, I realized I was out there in the world and nobody cared. Nobody was watching. I wasn't in the fishbowl anymore. I could sleep around, and what are they going to do? Fire me? No, they can't do that.
Yeah, you don't have a job anymore.
Yeah, like I was like, I could sleep around. I could leave. I was actually tempted for a while to leave my wife and my family and my just walk away from everything. I had this weird drive to just like become totally irresponsible and walk away from everything. That's all a part of deconstruction and leaving the ministry and everything. It was just like really terrifying. And that period of time in our marriage was really, really dangerous. Like that's when it could have crashed and burned. That's also when I finally, when Lisa looked at me and says, you need help.
Yeah.
And I found a counselor and started talking my way out of that tangled mess, man. But it was dangerous. It was really, really dangerous when I was suddenly out from underneath the microscope and felt like I could do whatever I wanted. And I just wanted to, you know, I had this horrible vision of myself being this grumpy old fart in a little one bedroom apartment somewhere, scotch in one hand, cigarette in the other, stirring Kraft dinner on the stove all by myself.
Right.
And it was terrifying.
Yeah.
It was terrifying.
It could happen though.
It could happen.
Yeah. You could be that angry old man yelling at the kids to get off his damn lawn.
Get off my lawn.
Yeah,
absolutely. Yeah, so I got help. I got help, and thank goodness, came out the other side of it, and our marriage is stronger now. Mm-hmm. But that was a really, really scary time when we didn't think we were going to make it.
I think, too, there must be the anger piece. I don't know if you've experienced that as well, but going back to this, what we talked about earlier about, okay, you spend all your life going to Bible college, seminary. This is your career. You're a pastor. You're a leader, blah, blah, blah. Then you jack it all in. For me, I realize it's a long process of dealing with the sort of anger, the resentment that I feel like, hey, I wasted 25 years of my adult life and a ton of money spent getting all these degrees. And do you feel that that's part of it as well? Because you have to process the anger, the betrayal, the loss, and all these other things. And then you can take it out on your partner who doesn't necessarily deserve it. He or she didn't do anything, but yet you're just processing all the crap.
Yeah. So we all deal with anger in different ways. And my way is to freeze. When I deal with trauma, one of my first reactions is I just freeze. There's the fight, flight, and mine is freeze, where I just go absolutely numb. And Lisa can tell, like we've been together now over 40 years, and she can tell that I'm dealing with something. And no, you think of Kubler-Ross's, she called them stages of faith. They prefer to call it phases now because you don't necessarily go through those in stages. You could go phase in and out of each and every one in a day or, you know, skip one or whatever. So we call them phases now. But anger is one of those that needs to be addressed. You need to feel the anger. It's like we tell our kids, feel the feels, man. You got to feel the feels. You got to feel that anger. And so fortunately, I got help and I had a therapist who could listen to my anger, all the anger I had over all that I invested in the church and walked away bankrupt, literally bankrupt, devastated. And not long after the church shut down, and it's like, what the fuck?
Yeah.
Like what?
And they're blaming you.
You can bleep that out if you need to.
Nope.
Okay. But it was like, there's a lot of anger. You know, you go through the denial, you go through the bargaining, you go through the anger, you go through the depression, and you go through the acceptance. But, you know, you can go and start all over again when you want to go down a deeper layer, right? Like the onion skin. So, yeah, there's anger for sure is a big one. Mm-hmm. But my response, I don't yell at Lisa or get violent or anything. I freeze. I just freeze and I get into this funk and I need to be awakened. My heart needs to get soft and melt again. And that's when I can process it.
And I think too, for older, perhaps men, I don't know, you hear about the midlife crisis thing. And I wonder sometimes, I was thinking about this the other day, you know, I'm in my early 50s now and I'm thinking, God, what have I done? What do I have to show for all those decades of being in ministry and going to college and seminary? I don't have anything. Like you said, I don't have any retirement. They didn't do anything for me. You know, I didn't get anything. The job I have now is probably the first job I've ever had that actually has a retirement package. It's got, you know, part of my salary goes to this pension fund. And it was kind of a shock to get it in the mail. You know, when I first started, it's like, oh yeah, that's what normal jobs do.
But you got to be 85 by the time you start collecting it.
That's right. I'll be, you know, 1 foot in the grave and 1 foot on the banana peel type thing. But it was kind of funny to see that slip come through the mail. It's like, oh, the church never did anything like that. I mean, there's nothing to show for it except a couple of pieces of paper, and that's it. You know, and you go, is that a midlife crisis where you're working through all that shit? And you go, what's that all about?
Yeah, because when I left the church, I was 52.
Yeah.
Wait.
Think about it.
No, I was 50. I was 50 years old. I was prime material, man, for a crash and burn, tell you.
You could have gone down hard.
Midlife crisis. Yeah, absolutely. It's like, here I am, 50 years old, bankrupt. What am I going to do now? And, you know, I went and taught at a university for a couple of years, and then I decided to just leap by faith. I'm speaking secularly. Trust that maybe Naked Pastor could make a go of it. And it did, luckily, but and I'm enjoying what I'm doing, but not a lot of people have that kind of option to be an artist full time. Yeah, for sure. And it messes with your marriage. Like, that's one of the things that Lisa and I, we constantly have to talk. It's like I challenged some men yesterday in a video I did. I said, guys, I dare you to ask your wife tonight, how are we doing? Are we okay?
Right.
Three words. I dare you to ask your wife, are we okay?
Oh, you don't want to go there, man.
And see what happens. Anyway, that's something Lisa and I practice. Are we okay? Do we need to talk? So it helps to do that. It hurts, but it's kind of like working out. I mean, no pain, no gain.
Yeah. So is your book basically like a helping manual for people who are going through this sort of stuff? Or is it more descriptive of, you know, encounters you've come across in your time as the Naked Pastor?
Well, it has my stories. It has stories. There's about 35 chapters. They're short and sweet. Some of them are just me telling stories, me giving warnings. Here's what's going to happen or could happen. And a lot of advice, for example, like communicate, how to maintain romance in the relationship or restore it even, how to listen, books to read, suggested reading lists. Mm-hmm. I've got homework for each chapter. I'll give you an example here. I'm just getting my book. Mm-hmm. For each chapter, I have a question at the end of each one. So for example, how to change in front of your kids. Have you and your partner sat down with your kids to discuss the obvious changes your relationship is going through in a way they can understand and appreciate?
That's good.
When your marriage doesn't survive deconstruction, I have a chapter on that and advice. Homework is, what is one thing you can do to preserve some good from your relationship? What value do you want to take from your marriage? And then one more, deconstruction, demons, and marriage. Is there anything about your partner that feels really foreign to who you thought they were? Explain. Right. And the cartoon I have there is one of my funnier ones. A man and woman are in bed, and the woman says, I'm just questioning all my beliefs. I mean, I have a lot of doubts, and I'm finding it very difficult and scary. And then in the next frame, this is what's really happening. And then in the next frame, what he thinks is happening, she looks like a demon, and there's snakes and everything. And she says, hi, Steve, I'm a demon that's taken over your wife. He's lost forever, and you're next.
You're next. They're coming after you next. So really the ideal reader are those couples, isn't it, who are married generally or just in a relationship who are perhaps on different pages? Is that really the intended audience, that one's not necessarily going in the same direction as the other?
Yeah. So you were a pastor once. You know, I saw way more women who were concerned about their marriage than I did men. So there's a lot of shame and, you know, guilt and fear and insecurity and defensiveness when people start questioning the validity or the value or the quality of their relationships or marriage or whatever. So I see a lot of, like, I've seen some people sending me pictures of the two copies that they bought, or several women have bought the book and saying, I hope I can get my husband to read it, things like that. So there are people where they're deconstructing and their partner isn't, they're reading the book because it has advice on how to navigate that. And then there's couples who are deconstructing who are reading it together. And there's even people who are like 17 and 18 who are dating, who are like, should we get married or not? Let's read this first and see. But you know, you are a pastor. Like when people's marriage were in trouble, I always said, listen, if you both can go, that's the best. But if only you'll go, you got to do that. You got to do it for yourself. If both partners can participate in their healing process, then that's the best.
What do you do though in the case, I'm just curious, of one person who is deconstructing, the other partner isn't, and he or she doesn't want to talk about it, doesn't want to know, just doubles down. What are you supposed to do in that kind of situation? That's got to be one of the most difficult ones to have to navigate through.
Well, I know we've talked about this before.
Oh, we did. Yeah.
Where, well, not in this context, but what I'm about to say, I know we've talked about
this. Mm-hmm.
Deconstruction, one of the biggest components of deconstruction is realizing that your faith isn't the biggest thing. Your spirituality isn't ultra, like, everything.
Everything.
Like, we were taught in our conservative, evangelical, or whatever circles, you must always be prepared to give a reason for the hope that lies within you. You must always be ready. You must, mm-hmm. Christ could come anytime. You need to be prepared. You need to be studied up. You need to study to show yourself approved. I mean, constantly, you had to be on your game.
On point.
All the friggin' time.
Yep.
It was, like, intense.
Exhausting.
24/7, even when you're sleeping, you had to have holy dreams. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
But when you start deconstructing, you start realizing, you know what? So I just don't believe that. I don't believe. I might believe that. I don't believe. Big deal. She's all upset because I don't believe the same stuff. And she doesn't want to talk about it. It's too upsetting for her, too scary for her. And you know what? I don't need to talk about it. I'm just me. It's just a part of my life. And, you know. What if ever she gets to that point where she wants to talk about it, I'm ready, but I'm not going to force it on her. And if you can navigate your relationship together like that and be happy and feel connected and all that. Now, for some others, like Lisa and I, we have no secrets. We're actually horribly, probably in the other direction where we have absolutely no secrets.
Right.
So we know everything about each other, kind of thing. And I think that's one of the things we value, is being able to talk about anything at any time. You know, that would be more difficult if I had to hide something from her, because then I would constantly feel like I wasn't showing up. But some couples can do that.
Sure. Oh, absolutely. Yeah. That's got to be one of the most difficult things. And then adding in, perhaps if you have children in the mix, that's another one. I mean, I know someone who right now is going through that. Her husband is not necessarily on the same page. Sounds like a great guy, but she's struggling because she doesn't want to go to church anymore. And her kids are going, wait, Mom, why don't you, you know, believe in this stuff anymore? And she used to be a strong, you know, leader in the church and all the rest of it. And so that is a whole different, difficult journey to have to navigate through.
Yeah, absolutely. But, you know, this is a human experience, isn't it? I mean, people change.
It's true. We've all changed.
You know, somebody might change their political ideas, or somebody might change their diet. And that's a good analogy, actually. Like when, let's say there's five of us in the household. There isn't now, but there used to be. One of them decides to go vegan. Everybody has to adjust.
It's true.
The way you shop for groceries, the way you prepare your meals, the way you serve the meals. And, you know, you have to suspend your judgment about, you know, whether it's more ethical to be vegan or not. So, you know, it's the same with deconstruction. Everybody has to adjust. But that's just life, isn't it?
And yeah, some people who won't adjust, for sure. I mean, that's the opposite, isn't it? The person who says, hey, if you want to go vegan, that's your choice, but I'm not going to change anything about the way I shop, the way I prepare my food. I'm going to eat meat. I'm going to do it in front of you. That's the other option, isn't it? It's just say, hey, screw it. I'm not changing. Even though I see you're changing, I'm not going to honor your choices and respect what you're trying to do. And that's another difficult thing to navigate through.
Yeah. A few of the cartoons in the book deal with that, where there's a woman and a robot sitting at a coffee table together, and the robot said, you've changed. Because some people want you to be like a robot. You know, you're programmed, and that's the way you will be forever, you know?
Yeah.
And that's just not realistic.
Yeah. It's true. At some point, you got to become a real human.
One of the things I talk about in the book is, one of the pieces of advice I give is, I realized when we were going through deconstruction and we were really changing, one of the things that sort of comforted us and opened our eyes, the light came on a little bit, was when we realized what attracted us to each other in the first place. Like, when I first saw Lisa, I was at breakfast in the college cafeteria with a bunch of guys.
Mm-hmm.
And she came in the door with her friend, and I'd never met her or seen her before. I'm going to go, who is that? And the guy said, oh, she's the MF. And the MF, what's that? The missionary fox.
Oh, right.
And I remember watching her walk across the back of the cafeteria and get in line. And I was like, you know, never once did her belief system enter my mind.
Right.
Right. I wasn't attracted to what she believed.
It wasn't her theology that won you over.
It wasn't her theology.
You didn't ask what her position on the rapture was or anything. First question.
Yeah.
What's your view on Augustine?
No, it was her beauty, her physical beauty. Mm-hmm. And then when I met her, just her spice and her spunk and her orneriness and stubbornness and willpower and energy and wisdom, mm-hmm. That's what attracted me. You know, of course, we were both going to Pentecostal Bible College, so there were assumptions there, but
there is that.
You know, what attracted us to each other was that chemistry,
mm-hmm.
you know, and our belief system really didn't have much to do with it. I encourage other couples, what was it, you know,
right,
that attracted you to each other, and that's still there. That same person is still inside there.
Mm-hmm.
They might have changed shape a little bit. They might have changed their beliefs a little bit. They might have done this or that or whatever, but the same person that you fell in love with is still inside there.
Mm-hmm. I've done this study on cult psychology, for example, this idea of your authentic identity. And maybe that sounds like perhaps what you're referring to. I don't know. There's the religious person, and then there's the real you, sort of the mask that you wear in church settings. That's actually not the real us. It's a character. It's an actor that we're playing this role, putting on a mask, playing this part to be perfect, that sort of religious scrupulosity and all the other things that you talked about. But then is the real person inside there somewhere? Yeah, he or she's in there. We have to go back and try to recover. That's part of the reconstruction process, I think, in part of the deconstruction is rebuilding and rediscovering that authentic self.
Exactly. Yeah. Mm. Yeah, I like that.
Yeah, so you're going to steal something that I said? I've used your deconstructing from the church and deconstructing your theological beliefs. That really helped me to kind of get my head around some of the things in my own past that I saw that's the path that I was on. And I guess I needed to go back and address each one of those. They do overlap to some extent, obviously, but they are different things, aren't they? So it's helpful to have those kind of models, I think, to be able to work through stuff.
Yeah. We're not stealing. We're borrowing because we're trying to help other people. And that's most important, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. Your book sounds like an absolutely fantastic resource. So it's for couples, people who are deconstructing whatever journey they're on. But it sounds like it's not just a self-help book. It's got a lot of absolutely fantastic resources and all that.
Yep.
So Till Doubt Do Us Part. That's the name of the book.
Till Doubt Do Us Part. Only one L in Till. People saying, I can't find Till Doubt Do Us Part on Amazon. I'm like, only one L in Till.
It sounds like an absolutely fantastic book. Thank you so much, David, for writing the book and also just sharing, really being personal, talking about your own story. That's really where the bedrock of the whole book comes from. It sounds like you're just sharing your own journey along with your wife.
Yeah. Thanks, man. Yeah. Appreciate it.